Rugby on Off the Ball
with Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
It's spinning! Jonathan Sexton has made it!
Do you feel moderately happy?
No, I feel like I've been kissing my sister, I suppose.
In the pocket for his drop goal attempt, here he goes, O'Gara! He's done it! That surely is the grand slam!
We target players all the time, that's part of rugby, isn't it? Let me know.
Sexton, wonderful pass and Stockdale finishes.
There'll be more than grenades. There'll be full tanks and full shells landing on the Aviva.
Grand Slam winners on St Patrick's Day at Twickenham.
But let's turn to yesterday's rugby. Leinster 18, Glasgow 15. Leinster win the Pro 14 title. We have Andy Dunn here in studio. You're very welcome.
Thanks, Joe.
And the news has come through in the last hour or so that Sean O'Brien is going to have hip surgery. Leinster have released a statement. He's going to have hip surgery and therefore will be out for 6 months and therefore will miss the Rugby World Cup before he heads over to London. So that's a sad end to Sean O'Brien's career. It's not the swan song he would have hoped for, lifting a trophy in his suit, as nice a moment as it was.
Well, a very classy moment, yeah, by Leinster. And obviously they would have known during the week that that was obviously a decision that had been made, and we've all found out now. But for Sean's own career, Irish jersey-wise, it's I'm sure it's quite a disappointment. I think we all hoped and felt he had at least 2 to 3 good games in him in the World Cup, if not, you know, regular matches there back-to-back, and still has in his toolbox the ability to influence a game in quite a significant way. But, not to be.
No. Well, there were parallels being drawn with the Lions tour a couple of years ago. He'd had a tough season before that and he got himself right for that tour and for that beautiful window. He was the old Sean O'Brien, and we all had maybe some hopes that actually he'll do something similar and will re-emerge in Japan, bluster through some games, maybe get a World Cup semi-final and then sail off into the sunset, but not to be.
No.
It was appearing increasingly unlikely as the season developed, it must be said, as opposed to that Lions year. The Lions here just went away and had surgery and got himself ready, whereas we were seeing him in patches this season and it just wasn't looking great.
Yeah, I suppose it's the unfortunate picture that you see of the ageing athlete that with each injury and with each surgery, there's an inevitable slowdown and a surrender to the body and nature and Mother Nature saying, you can't quite be as fast, you can't quite be as physical, or you can't quite be as resilient. And it does chip away at players' capacity to influence a game. But yeah, there are plenty of examples. You look at Tiger Woods, who you know, at 40 came back from spinal fusion surgery. So there are miracles out there. But just timing-wise, obviously Sean's on a 3-year contract with London Irish, and I'm sure they are hopeful to get a handful of games out of them, at least.
I would say so, bit their hand off for that contract.
Yeah, I think they've probably made a calculated gamble. Nobody signs a player without doing a full medical, and they probably knew there are underlying issues. But from a commercial point of view, he might make sense. They've a whole new departure coming out of the purpose building a stadium in Brentford. They're trying to reconnect with maybe the wealthy London Irish community and looking for sponsorship and corporate deals and having a figurehead who's, I suppose, reached legendary status in Irish rugby is a calculated gamble that they'll take on board, maybe if he doesn't play all that regularly, but is somebody that they use to market the new London Irish departure. I'm sure they'll get value for money.
Johnny Sexton said yesterday in the post-match press conference that he's one of the best players he's ever played with, Sean O'Brien, and he's the best forward he's ever played with, and half turned to Leo Cullen and said, no offence. Leo said, none taken, laughed. Yeah, yeah. Even he felt that was necessary to say. O'Brien at his peak, what made him so brilliant and just how brilliant was he for you?
Well, my own experience of playing with him, I've actually played, I think, his first Leinster A game. Down in Connacht. I could be wrong, it might have been his second or third. And I was an older professional who'd been to England and come home, and I always remember he absolutely ripped the head off me. He was about 18 and he ran a line, like a really aggressive line against the grain, and I went ahead with what was the pre-called play.
Oh,
and
the irony.
And
above, you sit here now.
I know, pontificating about people playing with instinct, but I the ball bounced off Sean's chest, like, because I didn't anticipate he was going to be there, and I figured he would apologise. Mm. And he absolutely tore into me on the pitch. He said it, plenty of expletives.
Yeah.
Well, the next time I run that line, you give me the ball, was what he said. And he was 18.
Good on him.
And you got a sense of, there aren't many people, there just aren't people like that a whole lot. There are callow youngsters who develop into good athletes over time, and they get, you know, they get hardened up. There are very people who arrive on the scene with that level of toughness and resilience. So that was immediately impressive upon me, what kind of character we were dealing with. And
I'm curious to know what your response was. I'm suspecting you were
up the ball. I just gave him the ball.
Stunned in the silence.
But you see, the nice thing as an out half is if you've got a guy who wants the ball that much, it's a joy. You just give it to him.
Yeah.
And then you try and decide what to do next. The danger as an out half is when you've got guys who are hiding and don't want the ball a whole lot. So he's a joy, and no wonder Johnny Sexton is saying he's the best forward he ever played with, because he probably got to appreciate that type of attitude and that type of, you know, hunger on a regular basis.
And did you see O'Brien maybe going off script throughout his career then, and seeing lines and running them accordingly?
Yeah, he did. I think there was a period there when Joe Schmidt was coaching in Leinster, where I think he did. He probably peaked as a Leinster player. And then the Lions was his all. I think the Lions in 2017, there was two periods. But he had a number of line breaks over the course of Schmidt's last season that I would have thought were just him reading the situation as he saw it, having the athleticism to get through holes, to offload. I mean, there was a couple of tries there. You go back on YouTube where he's throwing dummy passes, he's sidestepping people, he's carrying hugely, he's making huge inroads defensively to spoil opposition teams. So as an all-round open side, he's right up there with the best we've ever had.
Mm. Yeah, okay. So yesterday then, Leinster 18, Glasgow 15. This was a good game. It was a compelling game. Mm. In the wet, good atmosphere. It toed and froed. Glasgow took the lead after, 15 minutes, the Ferguson try. That was a very frustrating try for Leinster to give away, in that they were on the attack and Johnny Sexton threw a pass. It seemed like it was flat in the line, it was good, it was there to be attacked and hit the ground, and Henshaw made a tackle, and in the end suddenly Glasgow were up in the Leinster half, and then Cronin missed the line out. I don't know whose fault it was. The Cronin line out didn't go to plan, and Glasgow bludgeoned their way over, and you're thinking that is just a nightmarish try for Leinster to give away. I wonder, will it be one of those days? And they turned it around.
Yeah. The more I reflect, it's only not even 24 hours later. I think it's one of their greatest ever wins. They never lost a European Cup final before. They've only won four of them. So to go out and lose one, and to lose one in the manner they lost to Sarries, where I think, without going to the media or the public opinion, I think behind closed doors, I think they were hugely, hugely frustrated with their own performance in the Sarries game. I think there's a feeling within that group, the management and playing squad alike, that they completely underperformed, or they didn't adapt to the challenges that Sarries gave them. And I think there was a lot of introspection. To look at...
And are they being harsh on themselves?
No, I think they're dead right.
That's a correct assessment.
I think they're a better side. I absolutely think they're a better side. I know Saracens are hugely physical and have looked flawless at times, but I think Leinster played into all their strengths, and I think they're beating themselves up about it. So if you look at their response to that game, they've a very quick 6-day turnaround against a Munster side who were better rested, and they came out on the other side of that one, and that was pretty tough rugby for 65 minutes. They used the squad depth. They started with Ross Byrne, big decisions like that. So it showed Leo and Stewart's ability to draw on the actual squad depth, as opposed to just, you know, a throwaway line. They demonstrated to their own players, who are not frontliners, that they're prepared to give guys a shot in big games that matter. And wonders for a squad.
I'm sure it does. It would have been tempting as well, on foot of the defeat to Saracens, to almost get a bit conservative in your team selection.
Absolutely.
And say, look, let's just, whatever we do, okay, Johnny Sexton may be tired come the final, but let's just make sure we're there. where, as a, but we can't risk losing the semi-final. Then it's a disastrous season.
Yeah.
But in fairness, they did stick to their
guns. Yeah, and it shows what their culture is all about. It shows that, you know, they obviously have key players and guys they have up on a pedestal in terms of example and leadership, but nobody's entirely dispensable. And so they went on, beat Munster, and then they get into a final, in really an away final. It wasn't a neutral final. It was in Glasgow, obviously not in their home ground. Biggest final attendance in the Pro 14, and certainly would have been outnumbered from fans. A hostile environment.
Plenty of booing.
Yeah, and I think when you take into account that loss, it is maybe one of their greatest ever wins for me. And it just speaks volumes for their management, and it speaks volumes for their squad depth.
Mm.
In
terms of the performance then, what jumped out at you about both sides?
What jumped out to me was that Leinster were better suited to a bit of rainy conditions.
Yeah, Dave Rennie in his pre-match interview pretty much admitted they weren't thrilled to see the rain in Glasgow. It's not going to suit them at their very best.
No, and I think the difference being the two sides, Glasgow just tend to play that way. They play a running game, an offload game. They don't have another type of game. Mm. They certainly haven't been successful trying to play any other way for going on 7 seasons. So Leinster have that wonderful ability, I think, now that they've earned and learned, is to play different ways. Mm. And the great irony is they probably should have played more like Glasgow in the Saris game. And I think they'd have been successful. They should have played an offload game. They should have kicked for space. They should have not been blunt in their attack. It's easy to say here, but they were under huge pressure defensively against Sarri. So Leinster have demonstrated they can play different ways. And I think they chose the right cards yesterday. They got quite a bit of mileage out of Luke McGrath's box kicks, for example, that... Mm. Was a bit of a nightmare against Sarries. They got...
It's funny, isn't it? Because even just watching the kicking game is interesting. So Glasgow are trying to, you know, Stuart Hogg's booting that ball down there plenty as far as they can go and relieving pressure, and they're all chasing him after it, whereas Leinster went with the box kick repeatedly.
They did, but they also... We saw Johnny had a... He was a bit shaken, I think, in the first 20 minutes, just in terms of how he executed plays, which is unlike him. But then I suppose his experience shines through, and his capacity to not let that bother him.
Missed a few kicks early on as well.
Had that missed pass that you mentioned, went to ground, and then on a sliced kind of crossfield kick. But the intent was there to vary their game. They threw a screen pass at one stage behind to Henshaw, who kicked into the corner, and he didn't quite execute that. Yeah. But the intent was there, and I think the idea was smart. It was to vary their kicking game.
Which we didn't see against
Saris. We didn't see against Saris, no.
That's very frustrating in hindsight from a Leinster point of view.
I think so, yeah. I think it really ate into them mentally, the Saris game, because the simple narrative coming away, well, look, Saris are bigger and stronger with greater depth, and Leinster were powerless to succeed ultimately. And I think the narrative inside the Leinster changing room was entirely different. Mm. I think they have a real strong sense that they didn't do themselves justice.
Right.
So
Glasgow had about 58% possession yesterday. Mm,
yeah, they. I think it would have been nice for Pro 14 rugby had it been a dry day and Glasgow had got a chance to play the type of game they can play brilliantly because it's brilliant to watch, and it makes rugby as a spectacle great to watch, because we are subjected a lot to very intense physical battles that maybe, you know, start to veer towards boredom at times.
Yeah.
Glasgow are a bit of rock and roll when they're on form. I think the rain...
They did try a bit of rock and roll at times. They do.
And Rennie's side, I think, eight unforced handling errors where it wasn't in contact, he said afterwards, and that's they'll come away thinking they've let themselves down.
And that doesn't happen on a dry day?
Not typically with Glasgow, no.
It is harder to play that kind of rugby when the pressure's on in a final, is the other thing.
Yes.
You know, that is the... I don't want to say the problem with that type of Glasgow rugby, but it is an issue that as a tournament goes on and everybody gets a bit tight and a bit nervous, it is much easier in a final to do a bit of good old-fashioned bludgeoning.
Yeah, fair point.
Not to say it's not the right thing to do, but maybe that contributes as well as the rain suddenly. And I think, you know, we're all navel gaze, but Stuart Hogg's departure, the sense of a home final.
Yeah.
They were probably a bit tight. And it even struck me just as things were kicking off, you know, for Leinster, this was obviously a big day, but they wouldn't have been as nervous and tight as they would have been in Newcastle 2 weeks before. Mm. Whereas Glasgow would have been every bit as tight and nervous as Leinster might have been before the Heineken Cup final.
But I think Leinster's defence, we can't just gloss over. I think their defence was phenomenal yesterday.
Was it? I was watching it going, like, so this again, I'm very much the layman here, but I was watching it and, you know, I was thinking, God, there's such a difference the way they don't rush up and the way Saracens do.
Mm.
And so you're saying it's phenomenal, but me looking at it was thinking, God, I'd much prefer to play against what Leinster are doing there than that Saracens rush up on you business.
Well, I thought, well, Leinster mixed it again. They didn't always rush up, but I thought they showed phenomenal work rate, particularly off the ball. So maybe we're guilty at times of looking at the tackler and saying, you know, and that being what provides our overarching impression of the overall defence. You're looking at the tackler and how he made the tackle. And but around that tackler, the sprinting from side to side to fill spaces, the work rate to get back on your feet as a tackler and get back into the line. The next guy 15 metres away was making a hit, but the previous tackler was already back in the defensive line.
Mm-hmm.
There, Hugh, that's a barometer of your intent for me, is your work rate off the ball defensively. And so they showed that in spades.
Did they? That aspect was strong.
Huge.
Yeah.
It was huge in their game.
All I seem to be drawn to thinking about now is line speed.
Yeah, yeah. Very, well, there's obviously different ways. You can have a measured line speed, but a line with great integrity. Saris don't always have a line of integrity.
But they miss huge number of tackles.
Yeah. There's lots of spaces in between their defenders. They rush up. But it's a huge pressure game. So there's different ways.
Mm. And do you like the Leinster defence?
Yeah, I think it's pretty solid. Yeah, I think it's really well marshalled. Any defence, there's no such thing as a perfect defence. They can all be beaten and penetrated. But Leinster's is very, very, it looks to me, it's very clearly defined among their team. They understand exactly what they're trying to do.
Who caught your eye yesterday? Who were the better performers?
Cian Healy.
Yeah,
I think was fantastic.
What a turnaround for Cian Healy.
Yeah, it's quite incredible. I think himself and Furlong, there is a worry there for me in the depth behind Furlong. If you're looking at the World Cup, suddenly Sean is out now, and then so who goes in at seven? You've obviously Van der Fleer. Is it maybe Tommy O'Donnell comes back from injury? It's going to be, I think, far too early for Donal Levy. Yeah, but I don't think he's an out-and-out seven. I think he's more of a six, a bigger, slower six, very physical, who could convert to a seven. But I think the way Ireland play, they need a... I think they'll do really well with Van der Flyer, provided he stays fit.
No guarantee. He's had his issues.
No.
He's very abrasive.
But if you look, is it
Tommy O'Donnell in next?
Well, I'd say he's damn close. Obviously, he's been injured, but yeah. I think he's a super player. If he can keep his fitness. But sorry, just as I was saying with who impressed yesterday, again Furlong and Healy, there seems to be a reluctance on Leinster's part to bring on Andrew Porter early in the piece, and my query on that is, are they concerned about his ability to scrummage effectively?
Mm-hmm.
So that is a worry, because there's a number of good tight heads in Ireland. There's John Ryan, there's Stephen Archer, there's Marty Moore up in Ulster, who could all, in my mind, are probably a bit more grizzled and hardened as a scrummaging tight head, but they don't seem to be getting the nod ahead of Porter for the Irish setup with Joe. So it depends what they're looking for, Eddie, or tight head. I think going into a World Cup, you need two really strong scrummaging tight heads, because teams otherwise will go on the attack on Tadhg Furlong. And Tadhg had another brilliant game yesterday, but he does look to me like he could do it a holiday.
Rest, yeah. Did Andrew Porter not scrummage very well for Ireland in last year's Six Nations?
I think at times he did, and it's not my expertise either. But I think Leinster, there was a huge turning point in with about 10, 15 minutes to go yesterday. Glasgow put pressure on Leinster scrum a couple of times.
Yeah.
And it looks like the Leinster scrum did kink and started to fold, and they popped up, but somehow they got, and it wheeled. And Nigel Owens gave Leinster a penalty.
Mm.
And I think on the cold light of day, that could have been quite a turning point in the match. So in terms of those who impressed yesterday, the two guys in the front row did, but there's an underlying concern in that longer term for me, that our backup is not quite fully firing.
Anyone else?
Not particularly. I don't know how I just end up focusing on front rowers, but I think the two lads were excellent. I do think Jack Conan is probably the standout number 8 in the country at the moment, and surely is in line to start in the World Cup, I think.
Go on.
I just think he's a better rugby player than CJ Stander. He's got more ability around the field in terms of his attack play. I think he's a bit more versatile. I think CJ gives you a huge amount of work. He gives you a huge amount of industry and endeavour, and he's very admirable. I think Jack gives you roughly the same amount of work with a greater degree of talent.
Right.
Yeah.
Would that be a popular opinion, do you think?
Probably not in Munster, no.
No, but, sure, but generally.
I don't know. Yeah. I can't speculate, I suppose. It's my opinion. That's about it. I don't know who else is.
So in terms of ball carrying, there's no great difference?
Well, I think Jack Conan's a better ball carrier as well. I mean, CJ Stander is an abrasive ball carrier who is making multiple carries with very little return. You know, small yardage gained, whereas I think Jack, even playing in the same system, seems to find a way to make greater ground for the amount of carries he's taken. A bit like the way James Ryan finds a way to break the line somehow, more often than not. Mm. Whereas I think CJ doesn't. He finds the tackler more often than not. Mm. We don't lose possession, so it's not a terrible crime.
Sure.
But I think
Conan's not running straight into his man.
No, I think more often than not he's looking for space, and he's also a good link player. He can pass better, I think. Yeah. So.
What is Andy Dunn's Irish back row then, all going well?
Right now, I would probably say Jack Conan, Van der Fleer. Well, on form, I don't know what I pick Peter O'Mahony right now on form. I think he's been quiet by his standards, but maybe based on his history, you'd have to give him the nod on his leadership ability.
With Reece Ruddock pushing him.
Or even the likes of maybe Ty Byrne as a 6. There's always an option there. You'll probably have Toner and Ryan back in the second row. Well, Toner, I would assume, would be fit.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's lots to consider. I think Conan, though, for me, is looking like he should be in the driving seat.
Right, okay. Nigel Owens yesterday, was he overly lenient or did he judge this to perfection?
I think he was overly lenient.
I'm talking about several incidents. There was the dunt to the back of Luke McGrath, which he...
It's like an assault.
His rationale there was he felt that the Glasgow... It was the hooker, wasn't it?
Yeah. He
But his argument was, well, he may have thought that Luke McGrath had
the
ball.
The ball was landing in Luke's hands. He's made quite the assumption there from a different angle. Mm. I think he just made quite a big assumption, given the evidence that was at hand.
It's a very generous assumption.
Yeah, he's like, look, I assume you're a really good-meaning stand-up character and you thought the ball was in Luke's hand, so fair enough.
Like, even whoever it was didn't necessarily kind of nod and go, yeah, that's what I thought. He was almost like, are you? You're, did I think that? Okay.
Yeah, and it was dangerous. It looked...
A bit of whiplash.
It just looked so painful as
well.
Yeah. So I thought that was overly lenient. And I think by the letter of the law, Rob should have got a red card. Mm. I do. We have James Lowe.
Leo Cullen was saying, well, look, he was in the air, but I mean, he was like 3 inches in the air.
I don't think there was zero intent in what Rob was doing, none. But if they're going to be consistent about protecting the guy who goes in the air, the responsibility is on Rob to have a greater awareness that the guy was in the air. So it's really hard to do because you're sprinting up. I just think they need consistency.
That was Dave Rennie's point.
You've seen decisions go red for that, and then you've seen it go yellow. And we all know, looking at, and we know Kearney's not a dirty player. We know he was absolutely had his eyes in the air, focused. But it's like the Owen Farrell shoulder charges. You know, he can't wrap his arm. he's trying to wrap his arm. The reason he can't wrap his arm on Farrell when he because he shoulder charges the guy, and the guy then rebounds. He's too far away to wrap the arm. So the responsibility on Farrell is not to shoulder charge.
Yeah.
Similarly, when you chase up a high kick in the air, the responsibility on you as a chaser is to be aware that when a guy goes in the air, you have to be looking both at him and the ball and tracking both.
Yeah.
So I think again, Rennie had a fairly. Well, he had good reason to be miffed with that one.
Yeah. And like, again, it certainly wasn't malicious, but it did put the incident
all,
put Stuart Hogg out of the game as well, which adds salt into the wound.
His last game for Glasgow, and again, you talk about the likes of Sean not being able to start. Mm. But for Hogg, who I think is 10-odd years in Glasgow, that was a sad end for him, you know. So
it highlights why they're trying to stamp down on that incident, because even without Kearney trying to be malicious and just being careless, it still resulted in a very nasty bang for Hogg. Apparently he felt like he wanted to retch. You don't want people in that position routinely.
No.
So like, it has to be stamped out.
Yeah.
I thought I was looking at Nigel Owens thinking, this is bizarre level of leniency. Like, is it because it's a final? It was hard to know. In terms of what all this means to Leinster, it was kind of a tricky one to, even looking at the papers today, like, if you said to anybody, we would know how many Heineken Cups they have in the last 10 years. If you stopped someone and said, how many Pro 14s do they have? Two, is it three? No one quite knows. It's not as defining, I suppose. With that in mind, how important, is this win, do you think? I'd be inclined to think not that important. Makes them all feel a whole lot better. But beyond that, if they had lost, I'm not so sure it would have been disastrous in any great meaningful way.
I don't think it would have been disastrous, because they've a very solid group of people involved and they've a lot of depth. But I think it was hugely important.
Go on.
I just think they haven't lost a Heineken European final before. They've won. Mm. And they've been obviously... two finals last year that they won both, two finals this year. Losing the first final puts it up to them and say, what are you made of now? You know, is there potential for, you know, if Leinster lost both finals, there would have been question marks about, you know, their strength and depth, about their subs bench. I mean, is it a really smart policy to keep bringing through homegrown players? I think there's loads of questions that would have come out invariably when you lose two finals.
Might they have been good questions? Papered over something here?
No, I think they would have been ill-advised questions. I think they have almost every single part of their policy bang on the money.
Right.
And so I was delighted that they showed a fight within them and I think a mental resilience to win. Mm. But I think I just mentioned earlier, to repeat, to use members of the squad in key knockout games just is, it's hard to put a value on that going into next season when they're going to go into Europe, they're going to go into Heineken games 2 weeks after the end of the World Cup and they know they can't rely on guys who are going to be absolutely physically battered and fatigued, and they've got to rely on younger guys coming through. They do have a brilliant school set up, they do have a brilliant academy set up. So I think it was hugely significant. Yeah, I really do.
They celebrated like it was, actually.
Yeah, I think, and they don't. They're in a new place. I think they never had to soul search after a European final and then play Munster and Glasgow. You know, back to back.
Bit of fatigue. I'm not surprised.
I think there was a huge challenge. There's always going to be a sense of doubt in the group after that loss.
Yeah.
Sorry, and how corrosive it could become. But they literally just squashed out that fire in two games and said, right, now we know where we're at, we're back on track. I suppose they feel a greater degree of confidence maybe than ever before, because they know they can bounce back from failure.
Okay. Interesting way of looking at it. Here is James Lowe, by the way, speaking with Stephen Doyle.
Great finish to the season, to finish out with a Pro 14 medal.
Yeah, I mean, it's 40-odd weeks, you know, of work, so to come away with a medal was always very good. And I mean, 57 players, I think, this year. So the fact that, I mean, only 23 got to represent today, it's not just about us. It's about all the boys who have put in the work throughout the year, and to come away with the medals, I mean, we couldn't be any more happier.
Johnny was saying there was real determination after what happened in Newcastle as well. You weren't leaving the season without a
trophy. Yeah, you know, it's I related it to like Liverpool. You know, like, they're such a good team. If they don't win a trophy, you know, it's gonna probably they'll see it as a bad season, even though they're such a good team. So. You know, we learnt a lot from Newcastle. We probably got stuck in fourth gear. Credit to Sarries, obviously, for playing so well and putting us under enormous pressure. But we learnt over these last 2 weeks. And if we didn't perform today, you know, all that was talk. So the fact that we were able to close out and score points when we did, I mean, it was awesome.
Was part of that down to game management as well today, because you spent a lot of time up in their 22, you denied them at the ball.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah, and that's what you have to do with Glasgow. They're such an expansive rugby playing team. I mean, I played under Renz, their head coach, for 5 years, and I mean, when they've got the ball, they want to score, and when they don't have the ball, they're trying to get the ball back. So, and then they've got some amazing athletes. They've got a lot of young talent. I mean, Scotland's future is probably pretty bright.
You're behind in the game for about a minute, as it worked out. I mean, the quick response after their try was very important.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the nitty gritty of the game. Gary Ringrose probably doesn't do all the fancy stuff, but what he does do, he's got huge impacts on the game, and he's got a huge future for such a young man. His school just brought a horse. It's called Something Stupid the Fame. And it won, so he's just upgraded houses. But man, he's an awesome athlete. He's an awesome dude off the pitch. One of the nicest men you'll ever meet. And I mean, that's the nitty gritty that gets us over the line. I mean, that's part and parcel with fighting fire with fire. You know, we know this Glasgow team. They got here through their own merit. They're a very physical side, and like especially their pack. You know, they're almost mongrels. You know, they're there to hurt you at every contact. And I mean, it got them this far, and we knew that if you smack the dog on the nose that many times, they won't keep coming back. So fortunately, we were able to do that, and we came away with it.
How important was experience, James?
Crikey, you've got some accent, lad.
There you go. Second row myself. How important was experience? You've got guys in your team that have won Grand Slams, that have mm-hmm. won umpteen titles. Your coach has been here and done it. Glasgow perhaps didn't have that same knowledge of how to manage an occasion in a big yeah. match like this.
But I mean, it's come through. I mean, everyone in this team has lost big finals as well, you know. So you got to take a bit of pain to grow. And I mean, that team, they're young enough. They're going to be around for years to come. You know, they're going to learn from this, and I hope that they do, because you know, we'll be ready for them again come the next season. Very young, Hastings. We're able to shut him down. Hogg, he didn't get too many big appearances. So they're a good side, and we managed to shut them down.
There we are, James Lowe, winning friends wherever he goes.
Yeah.
So sum up, as you said at the outset, you have this ride up there as one of Leinster's very best wins, considering all the circumstances and the nature of the performance as well, and just how good Glasgow were and how they were feeling about the occasion as well. So they can head off into the summer, Leinster, feeling good about the organisation at all levels.
Yeah, very much so. I think the biggest takeaway for Leinster from this season is when under pressure in that European final, they didn't respond by very interchanging tack. And I think they'll probably won't make that mistake again. I think they will have a greater degree of adaptability and flexibility in their approach, or they will have some signals or cues among the leadership group going into a similar setting next year,
yeah.
where they will have just said, look, okay, this is happening in front of our eyes. Something needs to happen now to change it. And that is scary, given that they have played 57, 58 players this year. There's no sign of their production line slowing down. There is still a very, very established and experienced leadership group. And then you've got the likes of international world-class players like Furlong, like James Ryan in their pack, who the young guys look at and see every day. And that sets a different standard for those kids, because they see world-class ability and resilience in front of them on a daily basis. So it's has all the hallmarks of a dynasty for another few more years. But to me, the reason that stays on track this season is because they showed they can learn from Sarri. So I think that is a fearsome prospect for other European clubs next year and teams in the Pro 14.
Okay. Andy Dunn, thanks so much for coming in. Short break, back with half times from Tullamore and Salt Hill.